Hi, everybody. My name is Barefoot Bill. I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Bill.
Sometimes I think people just show up to these things to see if I really don't wear shoes. I even have little mats for myself today, so. Just to give you 5 minutes of where I come from. I guess sometimes as a joke I'll affectionately describe what it was like by saying that when I was 17 I went to this party and when I was 30 I came home from that party. That pretty much covers it, to be honest with you. It was pretty nonstop and it was pretty extreme and it was very strange. Twisted. My friend calls it twisted. I would definitely agree with that. But I had finally reached a point where I realized that I had to stop and that I couldn't. For me, the definition of an alcoholic is that once I drink, it always goes too far, or usually goes too far, where I can't really safely predict how much I'm going to drink once I start, and that when I stop, I can't stay stopped. For me, that pretty much describes powerlessness and alcoholism in its surface level. And I came to AA. I was in AA for 3.5 years. I made a lot of coffee. I put away a lot of ashtrays. I put away chairs. I went to diners. I went to meetings. I went to conferences, conventions, people's houses. I didn't drink, and I went to meetings and all those other things. I really thought that alcohol was my problem, so not drinking was my solution. And for 3.5 years, I progressively got more miserable. And I progressively was inside my head 24 hours a day, except when I slept, and I was having problems sleeping again. And my emotions and my mind was beating me up, chewing me up, and spitting me out. And I reached a point where if this is what it's going to be like, I might as well just kill myself, or I might as well just drink. Because at least when I drank, I had moments of relief, or moments of blackout, or moments of just not being inside my head, chewing me up and spitting me out. And it was at that point that some people came into my life, and they pointed out that my problem wasn't alcohol, but my problem was alcoholism, and that there was more going on here to living a happy, contented, useful life than not drinking. That if I wanted to not drink and be happy about it, there was a whole lot of work that I needed to do, and that that's why we had to get into the steps. And up until that point, I really just didn't think that it applied to me. The steps are intellectually insulting. They don't apply to what my problem is. It doesn't seem like it would. I had tried these things, parts of them before. They really didn't make sense to me. I kind of came from the street. You know, you don't admit to the things that you did wrong. Even if they have video, you do not admit to what you did wrong. It's as simple as that. And I started getting into the steps because I started seeing there was more going on here, that there were emotional, spiritual, and mental levels of alcoholism that I didn't start dealing with yet. And that was why I had so much unmanageability on the inside and so much discomfort, now 3.5 years not drinking. And in getting into the steps, reluctantly, not thinking that they would work, and also, on some level, getting into the steps just to prove that they wouldn't work. It's interesting about the steps because it really doesn't matter if you believe that they'll work. It really doesn't matter why you get into it. The amazing thing is that when we do the work as earnestly and as thoroughly as we can, and I can't say it was anything like I thought it would be. I mean, you know, last night I kept saying it over and over again, I just came here not to drink, you know, or to learn how to drink, maybe even, you know what I mean? But something happened to me in seeking a spiritual path and in working the steps. I guess at this point I go through the steps once a year, starting at step one again. And an amazing transformation occurred for me where every aspect of my life changed for the better. And I really can't tell you how that happened. The only thing that I can come up with is the X factor called God. When I was willing to consider another way besides my own, and to do certain simple things, which I think are spiritual activities, that it opened up something in me, and it got rid of something in me that was my, it got rid of what was my problem, and it opened up what was my solution, and what has brought a lot of peace and a lot of happiness and serenity and freedom in my life today.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mike Lawrence, and I am an alcoholic. My home group is the Carry This Message group of West Orange, New Jersey, and my sobriety date is September the 27th, 1993, and for that I'm very grateful. It's good to be back here again. Last night was an unbelievable experience for Bill and I. I was so hyped up after leaving here last night. I don't think I fell asleep until around 2 a.m. So probably a lot of what you're going to hear out of me today is caffeine, possibly. I don't know. Or Powerade, maybe. I mean, they tell us we need a power greater than ourselves, right? You know, so Powerade must be for drunks. I came to this wonderful fellowship at the ripe old age of 21. And I really believe that I had hit a bottom. I had hit a state of surrender. I was willing to admit complete defeat like I was never before in my entire life. I noticed a lot of young people here this morning, and I'm really, really happy about that, because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, a couple of the old-timers would say things to me like, well, young man, I don't know if you're really an alcoholic because I spilt more alcohol than you probably drank in your entire lifetime. And I'm like, listen, old man, if you weren't so busy spilling all that alcohol and if you were drinking it, maybe you would have made it here sooner. You know, kind of neat spiritual stuff like that right up in the beginning. But I am definitely an alcoholic. I have a case history that proves it. I have a body that cannot handle alcohol like normal people, whatever that is. By the way, just as an aside, not too long ago I heard a guy make this statement. We in Alcoholics Anonymous like to bring into our meetings stuff like, you know, us alcoholics inside here and those normal people out there. You know, like there's really any such thing as a normal person. And what this gentleman said was, there is no such thing as normal people. There are just those people that have not shared with you yet. You know, so I kind of identify with that. I also have a mind of an alcoholic, as if you can't tell already. I've encountered neat stuff in my drinking, like strange mental blank spots. All of a sudden, I'm in a sober blackout, and I come out of that blackout drunk, pounding on the bar, not knowing how the heck I got there. I have neat things that go through my head when I'm suffering from untreated alcoholism, like, you're just getting out of jail, but don't worry, this time will be different. You can handle that stuff like those other people can. One or two drinks will just take the edge off. You'll be okay. It won't burn you like it did 2,567 times before. But I also have something that our big book on page 64 refers to as the spiritual malady. And I'm grateful for the stuff that our book and people that have been put in my life that really talk to me about this thing called the spiritual malady. It says in our book that once the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And that was kind of a new concept for me, because I always thought that, you know, I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm going to dry out, so my body straightens out first. So physically I'm going to get better, and then, you know, stick around here for about 5 years and you get your brains back, and stick around for 10 and you find out what the heck to do with them. You know, and I always thought that my mind was the second thing to get better. And then, you know, maybe after, anybody ever hear anything like this? Just work a step a year. I mean, by God, I'd be on my ninth step right now. I wouldn't be on my ninth step. I'd either be dead or in a bar or in the loony bin, you know. But I kind of took it like that at first, and I thought that the last thing that I needed to do was spiritual development. The title of this workshop is called "The Spiritual Life Is Not a Theory; We Have to Live It," and I was not ready for that. I really believe today that the God of my understanding likes me a lot better than he does Barefoot Bill, because it took Bill about 3.5 years before he got willing to get into the steps. And for me, it was somewhere around 5 months, where I was just suffering from a part of the disease that I absolutely had no idea that I had, and I had had it my entire life. My entire life, I felt like that round peg trying to fit in a square hole, or a square peg trying to fit in a round hole, however that thing goes, I felt like it. I felt like the loneliest person in the world. I was at the jumping off spot darn near my entire life. And I wished for the end, and I could not imagine my life with or without alcohol, ever. And when you get to that place, there ain't nowhere to go except for God, or to get drunk again. But I came to the same place somewhere around 4.5 or 5 months dry that Bill did at 3.5 years, and I just said, you know, if this is how life is going to be with alcohol, I might as well go get drunk, because this sucks. I was not having a good time in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's no reflection on Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous was doing its job just fine. I wouldn't have known a step if it would have bit me on the face. You know, I had some work that needed to be done, and around 5 months sober, just not drinking and going to meetings wasn't helping my internal spiritual condition that was literally killing me. I had neat stuff that was killing me, you know. Stick around here long enough and everything will get better. Oh yeah, it got better for me. My resentments got better, my fear got better, and my sex conduct got a lot better. You know? But again, I was literally dying from a part of the disease that I absolutely had no idea that I had. And I became willing to take directions from something else other than my own mind. And somewhere around that time, the Big Book was introduced to me, and I had to get busy with this program recovery, or else I was going to die.
Walt kind of threw out before sort of the premise of what we did yesterday and today. And that's something that is rather interesting, and I think it's one of the things that the people who put AA down kind of come from. And that's that AA doesn't deal with alcoholism. It says all over our literature, and I'm going to read a whole bunch of them from the Big Book, that when the spiritual malady is overcome, that we straighten out mentally and physically. And the reason why the 12 steps can be used for so many different addictions and so many different compulsions is because it doesn't really deal with, let's say, alcoholism. It deals with the root of the problem, which is where the alcoholism is coming from in the first place. It doesn't deal with the fact that we drink. It deals with why do we drink. You know, these doctors keep trying to come up with pills that you could take that would cure an alcoholic or whatever, but bless you. Something a pill never will deal with is why do we drink in the first place? What am I escaping from? Why is it that my inner condition is so uncomfortable that I'm looking to get away from that? That I'm always looking outside of myself to do something that I can't do within myself? And what the steps do is it reverses that, where we can do something, that something is happening inside of us that's bringing about that comfort and that manageability and that freedom and that peace, and that drinking and drugging or whatever just isn't really an option because we feel good naturally. We can do it here and now. So the premise that we're coming from is that, you know, it says at the beginning of the 12th step, it talks about having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. So it's saying that the goal of the steps is not recovery. The goal of the steps is to have a spiritual awakening, and a byproduct of the spiritual awakening is that we recover from alcoholism. It seems kind of controversial, it seems kind of contrary, but again, AA really doesn't deal with alcoholism. It just deals with maintaining our spiritual condition, and that's what deals with the alcoholism, quote unquote. We deal with the root of it, and then that helps us with our thinking, and that helps us with our motivation and our actions and all that. If we get to the root of it, that deals with it. It's interesting because I've heard people say that, you know, I'm doing the work. And what they would consider doing the work is the steps. I'm doing the work, I'm doing the steps. But really, the steps are preparation for doing the work. That doing the work is helping another person. That the steps prepare me for being able to help somebody else. Which inevitably, like I said, is kind of the goal of the steps, is to open us up on the inside where we have something to give to somebody else to help them and reach into their cave and pull them out. and to perhaps even go into the cave and show them how to get out. These are some of the things that I've seen in the big book about the fact that it's not really a drinking problem, it's a spiritual problem. We don't have relationship problems, we have a spiritual problem. We don't have spending problems, we have a spiritual problem. We don't have a work problem with our boss, we have a spiritual problem. That when I live my life in a self-centered way, everything clashes with me and everybody I have a problem with, mostly. Every resentment inventory I've ever heard, there's one statement that covers almost all of it, and that's that they're not acting the way I want them to. So of course I'm pissed. They're not acting the way I think they should. And therein lies my clash and the way my life is, and therein lies why I have so much inner turmoil and so much inner problems that alcohol becomes an option, because alcohol helps me with that. Alcohol brings me ease and comfort when I drink. What's interesting is that it doesn't do that for a non-alcoholic. A non-alcoholic has a drink or two and then says, you know, I'm feeling the first one, I don't want any more. They have one or two drinks, they have a take-it-or-leave-it relationship with alcohol, but once I start drinking alcohol, I go too far. That I have I need alcohol to deal with life kind of relationship with alcohol. A non-alcoholic doesn't have that. That's why they look at us and say, can't you just not drink? Don't you remember that the last 10 times that you drank, you got arrested, got into fights, lost your job, lost your wife, you know, broke up with your family, the whole thing? Don't you see that that's happened the last 10 times that you drank? And we say, no, we really didn't even notice that. As a matter of fact, I'm not thinking about the problems that it's causing me when I drink. I just think about the relief that's going to come once I take that drink. And then once I take the drink, I set up a craving where I want more, and then I go too far. And then I have a lot of guilt or remorse over the things that I did, because I shock me with the things that I do when I'm drinking. And then I try to stop for a while, and then I don't think about the problems that it causes me. I just think about the ease and comfort, because I got all this inner turmoil and all this inner unmanageability, and then I go back to the drink again, and I can't understand why. And everybody's like, you know, they're just seeing what's going on the outside of us. They're just seeing the problems that's causing. They're not seeing that, first of all, we have a lot of discomfort on the inside and unmanageability, but also they're not seeing that when I take a drink, it helps me with that, because it doesn't help them with it. They get an out of control, beginning of a nauseated, I don't like this, I don't want any more kind of feeling when they drink. I can't relate to that. When I drank, I got this exhilarating, I love this, I want more kind of a feeling. That's why I went to get more, and they were saying, no thanks, I'm feeling the first one. They were having a completely different experience than I was having. I never knew that, because I assumed that they were having the same experience I was having. So these are some of the things that I've seen in the big book that talks about that really this whole thing is just about spirituality. This is from the Came to Believe book. This is on page 6. It says, during a meeting one day, I remarked that I was just tickled to death with this AA program, all but the spiritual side of it. After the meeting, another member came up to me and said, I like the remark you made about how you like the program, all but the spiritual part of it. We got a little time. Why don't we talk about the other side of it? That ended the conversation. On page 14, which is Bill's story, it says, if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. In the Roman numerals, it talks about that we work out our solution on the spiritual as well as altruistic plane. Altruism is the giving of yourself and expecting nothing in return. Altruism is a very wonderful, unselfishly, lovingly giving of ourself as, in service, which is a spiritual activity. So it's saying that our solution is spiritual as well as spiritual. It talks about, on page 25, if you are as seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and if we had passed into the region from which there was no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other was to accept spiritual help. Then on page 44, he says that again. It says, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. So it's almost like he's saying that if we're an alcoholic, there's really only two paths we can go down, either a lot of booze or a lot of God. Then in the Jim story on page 35, it talks about, we told him what we knew of alcoholism and the answer we had found. He made a beginning. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. To his consternation, he found himself drunk a half a dozen times in rapid succession. He failed to enlarge his spiritual life. As far as I'm concerned, and again, this might be a controversial statement, but every single person that's ever come to AA that relapsed, that was the reason why. They failed to enlarge their spiritual life. On some level, there was some aspect of the program that they were not working. On some level, they didn't make all their amends, they didn't do their inventory, they weren't doing the prayer and meditation thing in the morning and doing an evening review. They weren't being of service, perhaps, to other people. You know, very often you hear people say, well, I just stopped going to meetings because they just didn't even really feel comfortable there anymore. There was some aspect. It's almost like they were working a program or their program, but they were working all of the AA program that's suggested here in AA. Page 45, it says, lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live. And it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but where and how are we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about, the big book. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. It doesn't say it's going to help us solve our problem. It says that this power, when we tap into it, will solve our problem. During how it works, it says, remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one that has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. And in the original manuscript, which is what the big book looked like before the last changes were made in it, what that sentence said was that you must find him now. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm happy that they changed that. It would have been a bit abrupt and extreme if I had walked in and heard somebody tell me that I must find God now. But it's interesting in seeing where the original writers were coming from just before they made the changes that you know, where they were coming from was that, you know, this is very important that we need to do. Step 12 talks about having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. The A, B, and C and how it works talks about that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism and that God could and would if he were sought. For me, I think the key word there is the word sought. Page 64, it talks about when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Page 77, both the alcoholic whose hope, and in the original manuscript that said whose only hope, is the maintenance or growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal, for when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And what's interesting there is he's kind of throwing out an equation. He says that the insanity of alcohol returns, and then we drink again. So for me, the sanity that we need to be restored to in the second step is seeing the truth about alcohol. That, you know, I've heard people say that, you know, my insanity of alcohol was all those DWIs that I got and that I lost my wife and all the crazy things I did when I was drinking. That's just alcoholic behavior. Anybody that drinks heavily is going to experience some kind of insanity in that regard because alcohol just gets us to do things that we probably shouldn't be doing. But what we all have in common, and a lot of those things we don't all have in common, like I never had a DWI. That doesn't mean that I'm not an alcoholic. But the one insanity that we have all in common is that for some reason, even though according to all of the evidence, contrary to what I'm about to say, I went back to drinking. That again and again and again and again, I went back to drinking, and that was the insanity that we all share if we're an alcoholic. Then on page 99, it talks about remind the prospect, which is the newcomer, that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. Page 100, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we had planned for. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances are. That I've experienced in my life an incredible freedom that if I get the job, I can be happy, and if I don't get the job, I can be happy. If someone acts appropriately, I can be all right, and if someone acts inappropriately, I can be all right. If the wife leaves, I can be all right, and if the wife stays, I can be all right. If the boss is reasonable, I can be all right, and if the boss is not reasonable, I can be all right. That my circumstances and my emotions don't drive what happens to me today on an inner level. I am not my emotions, I am not my thinking. Last night I threw out something that's really very funny, and that's the statement that, you know, we all have a Grand Central Station mind, but that we don't have to get on every train that comes through the station. My mind tells me all kinds of weird things. I don't have to listen to it. I don't have to buy into it. I can know that what my mind is telling me to do is wrong, because I think that's the aspect of our disease that sometimes we don't notice is that within us, and we'll get into it later, that there's these kind of two parts and these two voices that are kind of talking to us. One is the loving and the peaceful and the unselfish, honest voice, and the other one is the fearful, selfish, I'm never enough, self-pity kind of a voice, and that there's these two aspects within us that we need to distinguish between, and I think that's something that the steps helps us do, is that we can distinguish between sort of the good voice that I think is of God and the bad voice that I think is of ego or selfishness or self or whatever you want to call it. One is kind of self with a small s, and the other one is self with a large s. Page 100, it talks about Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics perhaps are not supposed to do. It says people have said that we must not go where liquor is served. You know, we need to shut the TV off because there might be a beer commercial. We can't go see movies because there might be some drinking going on. Or we can't go to a Christmas party because they're going to have alcohol there. Or we can't go to a wedding. And then it says we must meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic cannot meet them, still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with their spiritual status. Then on page 120, it talks about if we've relapsed, what needs to happen for us to perhaps progress this time. It says, though it is infinitely better that he have no relapse at all, as has been true with many of our men, it is by no means a bad thing in some cases. Your husband will see at once that he must redouble his spiritual activities if he expects to survive. You need not remind him of his spiritual deficiency. He will know it. And then on page 164, it talks about God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. So see to it that your relationship with God is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. There's sort of another equation there that it talks about. See to it that your relationship with your higher power is right, and then great things will come to pass for you and for other people. But we got to deal with that relationship with our higher power first, and the relationship with us, you know, perhaps second. And we'll get more into, distinguishing perhaps which voice we're listening to. How do you actually do this? You know, it's real nice to talk about it, but how do you actually do that as we go along today?
When I found out what, let's say, the subtitle of this weekend was about maintaining conscious contact during the holidays, I was really happy to hear a statement like that. And all in the same breath, I was a little intimidated to hear a statement like that, because I think it's a topic that's really well needed in Alcoholics Anonymous. But the opposing thought that ran through my head, and it's something that I shared with Bill over the phone, I said, you know what, I'm really not going to have a lot to say this weekend because I don't do anything differently as far as my spiritual status. I don't do anything differently during the holidays than I do the other 12 months, the other 11 months during a year. You know? So I think what we have to share with you for the next couple hours is what we do on a daily, moment-by-moment basis. Not just some quick random prayer that I say before I go visit the family. Although, if you guys have a family like I do, you know the rest. Not some, dear God, please keep my memory green when I go to this work-related party, because, I guess I've been brought to a state of consciousness where this power that keeps me sober always has and continues to do that, and I need to do my job. I know that power is going to keep me sober, but there's a lot of work that I need to be doing which will enable that power to keep me sober, happy, joyous, and free. A spiritual experience which is described in step 12 promises me a solution for a problem that I had my entire life. What is this thing that we call a spiritual experience that step 12 talks about? What is a spiritual awakening? I came across a little parable that describes it for me, and I'm going to read it to you. A beggar had been sitting by the side of the road for over 30 years. One day a stranger walked by. "Spare some change?" mumbled the beggar, mechanically holding out his old baseball cap. "I have nothing to give you," said the stranger. Then he asked, "What's that you're sitting on?" "Nothing," replied the beggar, "just an old box. I've been sitting on it for as long as I can remember." "Ever looked inside?" asked the stranger. "No," said the beggar. "What's the point? There's nothing in there." "Have a look inside," insisted the stranger. The beggar managed to pry open the lid. and with astonishment. God, deep down inside me, just as our big book says, the fundamental idea is found deep down inside every man, woman, and child, and it's only there that this idea of God can be found. You see, God just didn't come into my life, as we like to say, when I entered Alcoholics Anonymous. As a matter of fact, I don't believe today that I'm any closer to God than I was on my last drunk. It's just my awareness is different today. I'm conscious of that power that's been there my entire life, that's been keeping me alive, that's been keeping blood flowing through these veins. God is just as close to me as my next breath. But I didn't know that. I wasn't awake to that fact. I was sleepwalking through life thinking I was awake. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous zombified, so to speak. And then some folks blessed me enough to clobber me over the head with a big book, and I began to wake up. Now, I don't recommend that you go around the meetings clobbering people in the head with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. By God, that would be like going into a baby's crib and startling the baby, wake up! No, you don't need to do that to a baby. That's not how we wake up people. There's 12 points to becoming awake. And it starts with the first step. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with a clogged drain to God, so to speak. Last night we talked about it. I gave the analogy of how if you have a clogged sink, a good way to unclog that sink is to go get some liquid Drano. And what the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous do for me is they're that spiritual Drano that unblocks the clog that I have to God. And once I pour that spiritual Drano into that drain, the channel, the pipeline, so to speak, to God, to conscious contact, to truth, to inspiration, to intuition, to the great reality deep within, higher power, Jesus, Buddha, whatever you want to call it, the 12 steps open us up to that power that has always been there. And now the water can flow through. The water can flow freely, easy for me to say, through the drain. And it's that even interchange back and forth. That's conscious contact. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, sometimes Bill and I like to say that we are not experts on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Although today I really do believe I'm an expert, because a couple years ago someone gave me the definition of an expert. Ex meaning a has-been, and a spurt meaning a drip under pressure. So I believe I qualify. But we're not gurus on spirituality or anything like that. I mean, I think a good indication of why we're here are the mistakes that we make on a daily basis. But thank God for those mistakes. Thank God for those character defects that are still alive within me. Thank God for today's selfishness. Thank God for today's honesty. Thank God for today's self-seeking. Today's fear. Something needs to get me back to God. I mean, I don't go through the 12 steps on practically an annual basis, just some out of nice, virtuous thing to do. I'm tired of watching the sports channel. I think I'll work the steps this month. That's not how it works for me. I need to continue along with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, beginning with the first step, getting in touch with today's unmanageability. Where am I at with my spiritual malady today? What's currently blocking me off from the grace of God? And how is that going to trigger me back to a drink of alcohol? And how is that going to trigger off the phenomena of craving? And how is that going to get me in the senseless series of sprees? And then my mind is all messed up again. And round, tornado city. And I'm going through the lives, I'm going through people's lives like the tornado, like it talks about in our ninth step. And that vicious cycle time and time again. That's going to happen if I don't stay in fit spiritual condition. So I like to stay current in the steps or in the work of Alcoholics Anonymous. In my experience, I believe that I've had what I like to call three surrenders. One came immediately upon coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. Matter of fact, my first surrender happened before I even came to you guys. I was arrested for sexual assault after drinking a fifth of Southern Comfort and a 12-pack of Coors Light, went into a nice state of consciousness called a blackout, and did some things that I'm not very proud of, and got arrested and spent about a day in jail, and came to you guys, Alcoholics Anonymous, 3 days later. Not knowing if I could live life without, with or without alcohol. Quite frankly, not wanting to live. Wanting to cash in all my chips and just getting out of here. But yet there was always that peace that was deep down inside of me that wanted life, that wanted to continue on. And I made a phone call to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was willing to sit in your stupid meetings night after night. I was willing to make the coffee. Matter of fact, I was so willing I had 3 coffee commitments within my first 30 days. I was willing to chair meetings at 90 days. You know. But then like I talked about several months down the line, I really think I got taken to another state of surrender. And that came to me in the form of the third step. I mean, as far as the second step is concerned, I really didn't have a concept of God when I got here. I really didn't. And for me, that was of great benefit. Because I heard a lot of stories where people had concepts of God, and that maybe they were brought up with a religious background, and they had a lot of old ideas, and they had this concept of a punishing God, and I'm going to get you, God, and stuff like that. So they encountered some obstacles. I didn't. I mean, I wasn't brought up with any particular religion, and I just came here an open vessel, and I just took everything in. Whatever you guys were talking about, I was taken to a place where I was taking it. I just took it all in. Didn't have much problems with the second step. My problems with the second step came somewhere about 8 years of sobriety, where I realized I had all these concepts of God, and now I didn't need any more concepts of God. And I began to get stripped away of all these old ideas and all these belief systems. And the God that I believe that dwells deep within me today is faceless, nameless, and just is. A guru from India wrote a book called I Am That. And in there, he describes that's what God is. I am. In other spiritual literature, it says that God is the great I am. That is my higher power today. Just is. I think one of the best questions I've ever asked in Alcoholics Anonymous concerning the second step is, where is God? Where is God? And the best answer I have ever received to that question was, where isn't God? It's all around us. It's within us. It's you. It's you. It's you. It's even Barefoot Bill over here. It's outside. It's the trees. It's the air. It's the electricity that flows through this facility. It's the connection that Jim and Bill made to get us here this weekend. Well, you think all of a sudden, one day, Jim just came up with the bright idea. I think I'll call Barefoot Bill and Mike L. from New Jersey and have them do a spiritual workshop. No. There's something that happened in there to give Jim that idea. That power which is God. May you find him now, by the way, not next Tuesday. Right? How it works says, there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find God now. The third surrender that I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm currently in, actually, and I like to call that a seven-step surrender, where I know I have these, I still have these character defects. I've gotten rid of some of the more detrimental things, some of the things that were going to kill me early on or bring me back to a drink. I've gotten rid of a lot of that stuff. Some of the stuff that was hurting you on a daily basis. The stark raving anger and rage that was just ripping people up and killing my insides. I got rid of that over the years. But there's some stuff within me today that I'm not quite sure I'm really entirely willing to be rid of. And that's the stuff that I need to look at. And that's the stuff that's going to bring me to the next surrender. How close do I want to be to God? How much of this do I want? That's the type of questions I need to sit with today. Sorry for going
over. 12 and 12 talks about it is a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. If somebody hurt us and we are sore, we are in the wrong also. And then on page 47, he kind of says the same thing. It says that we thought that conditions drove us to drink. And when we tried to correct these conditions and found that we couldn't to our entire satisfaction, our drinking went out of hand and we became alcoholics. It never occurred to us that we needed to change ourselves to meet conditions, whatever they were. I hate that. That whenever somebody disturbs me, there's something wrong with me. Intellectually, that doesn't make any sense. But you know what? Spiritually, it's pretty right on as far as my experience has been. It's interesting how, I brought up the resentment inventory before. What I've seen in my resentment inventory each time I've done something like a resentment inventory, the stuff that pisses me off about other people are the same things that I struggle with myself. And that they are simply just showing me something about myself that I don't like. It's not that I don't like them for doing it. It's that I don't like me for doing it. And that until I accept within myself those things that I struggle with, that I will always see it with the people around me. And what's interesting is that the opposite freedom occurred also. That when I started to work on those things within myself, all of a sudden those people didn't act that way anymore. And they didn't know what I was doing. I just didn't see it anymore. You know what I mean? One of the things that there's a close relative of mine that's kind of controlling, and it always bugs me whenever I'm around them. I'm controlling. That's something that I struggle with. It has nothing to do with them whatsoever. In regard to, some holiday freedom, because very often we're around our families a lot, and people that we care about will go and visit during the holidays or whatever. That has brought me an incredible amount of freedom. That these people that annoy me and these people that just, you know. Sometimes we say, they're pushing our buttons. They're not pushing our buttons. They're showing us that we have buttons to push and that there's something within ourselves that we need to work on. I am so grateful to these people today. To be grateful towards someone that I have a real problem with is an incredible freedom. I can see their role in my life today. I can be grateful that somebody is showing something within me that I need to work on. I can be grateful for people that I don't like, just like I can be grateful for people that I do like. And again, that's an incredible freedom in my life today. Another thing that's helped me in writing a lot of inventory pretty much yearly is that I believe that all anger, all rage, and all resentment comes from fear. That when I get pissed off about something that somebody did, if I can step back and say, let me disregard what's just happened, where is the fear? That 99.9% of the time, if not 100% of the time, there is some of that going on within me, that I have some fear that has just kicked up, which again I can be grateful for because it shows me there's something within myself that I need to work on. It's so interesting. You know, I've seen the term they call it mirroring, that people that believe that, you know, relationships, that we have certain relationships just to be a mirror for the things that we need to work on within ourselves. And I really love that concept because I don't think that life is as random as I thought that it was. That I've seen again and again and again that there are reasons for certain people in my life and there are reasons for certain things that happen. And that if I can use it as an advantage or if I can use it as an opportunity for growth instead of looking at it as a negative thing, that it's brought about a lot of growth in my life. That there was a time where if it felt negative, it was negative. Today, I don't feel that way anymore. There was a time that if it felt positive, I don't care. I don't care if it's wrong. I don't care if it's illegal. I'm going to do it. If it feels right, I should do it. And very often, that caused me so much pain and that caused me so many problems in my life. I've tried to get away from viewing things as good or bad. There are things that I could tell you about that have happened in my life that everyone here could say that was a bad thing. But somehow, with what had happened to me, I was able to use it in a way that brought about some real deep spiritual growth for me. And it showed me some things within myself that I didn't like. And if that didn't happen, I wouldn't have been aware of it. And that today I see those things as very positive. And there were things in my life that everybody here could say, oh, that was a good thing. And you know what? In some cases, those things actually almost killed me. So something that, you know, we're kind of talking about spirituality, we're kind of talking about the holidays, that those two things, the mirroring, that when people bother me, they're just bringing up something within me that I need to look at. In some cases, maybe that's not the case, but I know in my life, when I go deeper and deeper, I really do find something going on there. And then that aspect of fear and the fact that, you know, when I'm pissed at somebody, if I can step back in the moment, because, you know, in the 11th step, it talks about we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. If I can step back from this emotion or these thoughts that are just not on the beam or not healthy or not feeling very nice, that if I can step back from that and see what's really going on before I say or do something that I'm going to regret or that I need to make amends for, that there's an incredible freedom in being able to step back and not doing what I want to do in some cases or not doing what I feel like doing in some cases. Because when I step back, there's that aspect within me that we keep talking about that I think is that spark within us that is of God or a higher power or whatever, that we can tap into that even in times of incredible anger and even in times of a real mental train that we've gotten ourselves onto, to step back and say, you know, this just isn't the direction that I want to go in. This just isn't worth responding to in the way that I want to or the way I feel like, and that there is another way. I lived 30-something years of my life not having a choice. If you push this button, it's like a jukebox. If you push C-section, C7, this is how I was going to react. I was totally conditioned and I was totally driven by my circumstances and my emotions, and it was almost predictable that if this happened, this was how I was going to respond to it. I didn't have a choice. Today I'm so grateful in using these tools and in trying to head in a certain direction and in trying to tap into that voice within me that I never really noticed that much. That the more that I'm able to do that, the more freedom and the less damage that I do. Because, you know, I was a walking apology. You know what I mean? I constantly said to people that I was sorry for what had happened. It never stopped me from doing it again. As far as I'm concerned, the essence of the words, I'm sorry, is that it's not going to happen again. But see, before coming upon some of this stuff, I didn't have that. If you had said to me that that's what I'm sorry meant, I would have said, what are you talking about? No, I don't agree. You know what I mean? Today I see that as a spiritual practice, in that part of the word amend is change. You know, when you amend a document, you change it. So not only is amending setting right the wrong, but it's also changing our behavior so we don't do that anymore. And don't get me wrong, sometimes we go off. Sometimes we're off the beam. Sometimes we respond inappropriately, and we have a way of dealing with that too. And again, it shows us that we have some more inner work that we need to deal with, and perhaps if we move in that direction, that'll put an end to it happening. For me, that's kind of an important practice, especially with the amends, because, you know, I've talked with people that thought that, you know, amends just means you just say you're sorry. You know what I mean? They don't talk about, you know, having to pay the money back, you know, changing so we don't do that anymore. And I think that's sort of a surface view of amends, that, yeah, you know, saying I'm sorry is, as far as I'm concerned, a small part of it. But setting right the wrong and then changing our behavior is the essence of what's being talked about there. That's about an hour. Do you want to do another one? I think we have about 5 minutes. Or...
No, I feel a shortage of nicotine supply in the room, so let's take a break.
Yeah, why don't we take a break? I'd like to suggest that it's a spiritual practice to be on time. So we're going to take a 10-minute break only. Please be back within 10 minutes. Thanks.